for my guest in the studio, Matt the Electrician.
Hello, welcome. Thank you.
Is it true that you grew up your early years right here?
Yeah, I lived in Ashland. My parents moved here when I was a couple months old and lived in Ashland until I was about four, and then lived in Talent till I was almost nine, I think. I went to Talent Elementary.
Right on. And then started bouncing around a little bit, right down into Northern California?
Yeah, just kind of following. My dad had work down there, and so we moved to Marin County and Sonoma County. And then I went to college up in Humboldt County and moved back to Sonoma County. And
you mentioned in passing that Northern California was because your dad had some work down there.
Yeah.
But your dad had some work down there that gave you an opportunity to do things that everyone from our generation would be incredibly envious of.
Oh, yeah?
Just sort of rub elbows with people from Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It was very cool. I was at the exact perfect age, myself and my little brother. I mean, I was, I don't know, 10, you know, 9 when he started working there. And
at Skywalker Ranch?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing.
It was pretty amazing. And it's funny because after a while you just, I think I kind of took it for granted in a certain way because you just kind of figure, oh, every other 11-year-old kid is getting to meet Mark Hamill and George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. It was a great company, as far as I know. I mean, my dad's always spoken highly of them, but they really included everybody. And so they'd have these big Christmas parties, and the big one was the 4th of July picnic they'd have every year. And what was great about it was all the, you know, the carpenters and laborers and painters that were working on the ranch, plus all the people that were working for ILM, so all the technical guys, plus all the directors and producers and a lot of the actors from time to time. So,
and talking about directors, there's this really funny story I came across of you sending your brother to go get an autograph at that picnic, right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, every year for the 4th of July thing, I think it was at 4th of July, they handed out these yearbooks. So they looked like a high school yearbook. And it had everybody's picture in it and a little bio. So again, everybody all the way from George all the way down to, the laborers that were working at the ranch. And so it was kind of a tradition to take the yearbook around just like in high school and get people to sign it. And so we had all these yearbooks with, you know, George Lucas signature and Steven Spielberg. And that was very cool. And but, you know, as kids, we were way more into the idea of the actors. Mm. And so we did this one year at the 4th of July picnic. At the end of the day, they had a dinner and then dancing after that. And we were going to leave after the dinner because we had kids. You know, my parents had little kids and my sister was much littler. And so we were going to leave after the dinner. And we were walking out through where all the tables were. And my brother and I, we see Penny Marshall sitting at this table. And she is a wonderful director, but she was Laverne.
At the time, you know, yeah.
That was what we knew her as. And so we were freaking out. That's Laverne. Oh my gosh. And so we get to the van and we were kind of feeling some regret that we didn't get her autograph. And so we said, well, someone should run back and just get her autograph real quick. We'll take the yearbook back. And we decided to send my little brother because he was kind of the cutest. and we figured he could get away with it because they were eating dinner and we didn't really want to disturb them. But we did. And so we sent my brother back and he was gone for a little bit out of sight. And then he comes back to the van and he gets in and he's got the yearbook and he just seemed kind of puzzled. And we said, did you get the autograph? He goes, yeah, I got it. He goes, but it was kind of weird. And I think my brother was 7 or 8 at the time. And so him trying to explain it was even funnier, but he said, apparently what had happened is he walked up to the table and he approached Penny Marshall and she's sitting next to somebody else. And he walks in between the two and says, can I have your autograph? And this guy sitting next to Penny Marshall grabs the book and says, sure. And starts to sign it. And then says, my little brother, Gareth, says, no, not you, her. And everybody at the table starts laughing and he kind of blushes and I'm sorry, you know, and hands the book to Penny Marshall and she signs it. And so we open up the book and it's above Penny Marshall's autograph. It says Francis Fa. Of course, you know, 8-year-old kid does not know the director of Apocalypse Now
right.
By sight.
But you've got half the autograph.
Exactly.
That's cool. What are you going to play for us first today?
I'm gonna start with a new song. I'm working on a new record, hopefully pretty soon here. I've been working on writing it for the last several months and I'm fixing to record in the spring. So this is a somewhat new one.
Thank you. angels were telling me to pay attention, and all the numbers were standing in line. Was the easiest of days. There was unexpected sunshine, it was all that I could see, and everything was going my way. And I wonder if you had waited till the morning after the night, if you might have seen the same things. You might have seen the same bright light, like a beacon, like a bell. Or maybe it's just as well, wherever you are. There's no way to tell you now. There was an ornament of stars. There was magic that I could not comprehend. There were bells and they were ringing like guitars. Wasn't upside down. I could have cried if I'd thought a little harder, but I was laughing up until I hit the ground. And I know that I'm still standing, though the ground continues to shake. And for all the good I might give, oh, it's more than a share that I take. It's a token, it's a shell. Maybe it's just as well, wherever you are. There's no way to tell. Yeah, when my heart got bigger, I could see you better. Yeah, when my heart got bigger, I could see you better. Not in that way, but they were friends and they were girls. And I was troubled by the world of men, and I spent far too many days misguided, misdirection of their heart. And it took some time to navigate that maze. And every morning is an exclamation. There are stories that are forming every night. And I know it's not to win or lose. There's only reaching for the light. It's a beacon, it's a bell. I never have felt so well, but wherever you are, there's no way to tell.
It's Matthew Electrician live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. You got your first gig when you were about 15?
Yeah.
Were you any good then, or was somebody being really nice?
You know, it's debatable. I don't know. It's so hard to... Well, I was going to say it's so hard to look back. It's not. It's all on VHS, so it's pretty easy to look back. I think I was all right. I was writing a lot. I think my writing left something to be desired, for sure. But I was always kind of able to sing a little bit since I was a little kid. And so that always kind of came easier to me. And as we were talking about earlier, we're both brass players. way back. And I played trumpet from a fairly early age as well. And so I had a basic understanding of theory and music. But I always wanted to be a songwriter. And so in high school, there was one kind of real specific moment. My dad had always played guitar. There were always guitars around the house. And for some reason, I had never gravitated towards it, even though that was a lot of the music I was listening to was folk music and rock and roll from the 60s and all of that. But I never got into the guitar until I was in high school. And I was going to a new high school down in Pacific Grove near Monterey. And I had my trumpet, and I was walking to... I don't know where I was walking, but I had my trumpet and I looked up. There was this little hill where kids used to sit during lunch. And there was this guy sitting there and he had a jean jacket and long hair and his patches all over his jean jacket. And he was really cool with his collars up and everything. And there were all these girls around him sitting and he was playing like Sounds of Silence and Stairway to Heaven. And I just remember vividly like looking at my trumpet in my hand and then looking at this guy and looking at my trumpet. And I was like, I know I'm doing something wrong.
I know that pain.
Yeah.
I really know that pain. Having lugged a trombone around for years. It just doesn't
and that's
work.
That's more weight too.
It doesn't work the same way.
No.
So how do you go from that period to being an electrician?
Well, you know, just I think any aspiring musician will tell you that there's got to be a day job for at least a while. And I did every day job that everyone else did. You know, I worked in restaurants and all sorts of other stuff over the years. And I was living in Sonoma County right after college and working in a restaurant. And everybody that I lived in this house with, they all knew how to do things, like things that when you're a kid, you think that like dad knows how to do, and certainly sometimes mom knows how to do too, but it's traditionally like fixing a car and welding,
plumbing,
and you know, all of these things, and you know, using a skill saw. And again, much like the guitar, I was surrounded by it as I was a child. My dad was a carpenter, never learned how to do it, and was living in this house and started to feel really kind of emasculated by that, but also just wanted to know how to take care of myself. Wanted to, if I broke down on the side of the road, I wanted to be able to know what to do. And so these guys kind of helped me out that I was living with, and they taught me some things. And at the end of a year living there, I thought, I'm moving home to Oregon and I'm going to work for my dad. And I called him up and said, do you need help? Can I come learn stuff? And so I did about a year in Corvallis where I was his apprentice, and he was a union contractor, primarily a carpenter, but he used to loan me out to all of his subs occasionally. So I would spend a day with the sheetrock guys or a day with the electrician or just kind of helping out. Yeah.
So Matt the Electrician, was that a slow evolution to become the stage moniker for you?
Kind of. I mean, I went to Austin to play music, but I needed to have a job. And when I got this job, Austin was booming and they were building the houses like crazy. And I hired on with this electrical contractor, and we were working 12 to 14 hour days, 6 days a week. I barely had time to play, and the money was good, and I was enjoying the work, but you know, I'd gone down there to play music. So I was trying to fit in gigs, and I was trying to fit in just going to open mics. And I really had no time to go home after work. And, you know, you do construction, you get kind of dirty, but you do construction in an attic when it's 100 outside, it's 140 in the attic, you show up, you're just nasty. It's just terrible. And so I felt the need to apologize at the beginning of my set, you know, and say, I'm really sorry that I'm presenting myself to you, this audience, looking like this and possibly smelling like this. But I'm an electrician. And that just stuck. It wasn't even something that I wanted to take on, but people started calling me the electrician. And I felt like it was kind of silly in a town with that many musicians and that much of a music scene to kind of, you know, rock the boat and go against that.
It ended up working out okay?
It did, yeah.
When your songs come on, when we're playing your songs or we hear them, you don't sound like anybody else. I mean, you really don't. You kind of have your own unique thing. Was there someone specifically that you listened to when you were younger that you wanted to sort of emulate at all?
Well, I don't know that I ever thought about it super consciously, but the one that I do get, the one that I hear a lot, and it makes the most sense to me because I did listen to a lot of this guy, and some of the first songs I learned were his songs, was Paul Simon. Mm. And I think as I've gotten older and huskier, my voice doesn't sound as much like his. It's a much higher voice. But I think I learned a lot about phrasing from him, and a lot about kind of lyrically about picture, about the way you picture things and how that translates.
Now that there is a Mrs. the Electrician and mm-hmm. the Electrician Children,
yeah.
do you find those experiences working themselves into your songs now, watching things that your kids do?
Yeah, totally. I mean, Animal Boy, that record is mostly about, you know, family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear another song, and then I want to talk about a songwriting challenge that you started doing down in okay. Austin that was really kind of an interesting approach to crafting new songs. What are you going to play next?
Well, I guess I'm going to play the title track off of the most recent record, which is Accidental Thief.
Do it all the time. It's Matt the Electrician live on open air here on Jefferson Public Radio's Rhythm and News Service. So tell me about this songwriting workshop competition. What would you call it exactly? It was an exercise, you and some fellow singer-songwriters in Austin?
Yeah. There's a whole lot of different incarnations of it at this point. When I first heard about it, I was in Austin in my car, listened to the radio, and there was a local musician in Austin named Bob Schneider. And Bob Schneider is Elvis in Austin. Mm-hmm. He's fairly big in other places around the country, but he's huge in Austin. And he was on the radio, and he was talking about this song game. And he played this song on the radio, and then he said, yeah, swimsuit season. And he had done this game with his bass player, Bruce Hughes, his guitar player, Billy Harvey, and a couple other folks, and the guy who was opening for him at the time, Steve Poltz. And they were all on a tour bus together doing these tours. And so you're living on the bus. Like, you don't have a lot of escape or places to go. And they would give out a title. I think Bob usually does it, but he would give out the title and say, swimsuit season. Everybody's got to write a song called Swimsuit Season and record it and turn them in, like, by email. And you have a day to do that, 24 hours.
Like rough demo recorded or like a full blown?
Yeah, I mean, everybody kind of does their own thing. Some people are better at it than others, but it doesn't have to be anything special. The idea is just to get it recorded. And so they'd have 24 hours to complete that, this challenge. And it was just a game they played when they were on the bus. And that was the first I heard of it. I don't know if it was the first incarnation that Bob was doing. But I thought it was a really cool idea. I started doing it at my house every Tuesday with some songwriter buddies. And we'd have a week to do the song. And to pick a title, we would all write down titles on a piece of paper, throw them in a hat, and just choose one. And after that, I started doing a weekly songwriter night with myself, a guy named Southpaw Jones, and Bruce Hughes, who was Bob Schneider's bass player. And so he said, why don't we do the game, but we'll do it live. So once a week, we'll do it in front of an audience. And we picked the title and then told the audience, we're going to come back with three different versions of this song. And eventually we started letting the audience pick the titles. And then after a little while, I got to know Bob and started playing shows with him. And he invited me to be part of his email game. And it was songwriters from all over the country, all over the world. And usually it was about between 4 days and a week to do the songs and turn them in. And I did, I mean, I've been doing some incarnation of this game, and I still do it from time to time. I'm currently on hiatus, but I actually plan on starting it up next week again with some friends. But I've been doing that, I guess it's been since 2002, 2003.
And it's been really fruitful for you, right? I mean, a lot of the songs on your last couple of albums come from that process or some version of that process?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that probably my last two records, my last three records, there's two of those records, Animal Boy and the one before that, One Thing Right, are mostly from the song game. Huh. And then Accidental Thief, there's three or four from the song game. And then the ones that aren't from the song game on there were co-written with other writers.
Yeah. Looking at the song credits and the performer credits on the last couple of albums, there are things like Toy Piano, Euphonium, Glockenspiel, all sorts of things. Most of that's you, right? You play a lot of different things from time to time?
Yeah. Well, especially in the studio where there's nobody watching and and I have plenty of takes to get it right. Starting with Animal Boy, and I've been working with the same guy as a co-producer and as an engineer for the last three records. But starting with Animal Boy, he and I really decided, Mark Addison's his name. He's got the Aerie Studios in Austin. And we really decided to, I wanted to make a record that was a little bit different. And I wanted to do a lot of it myself. And I have a great band and I love my band, but I had made four records that were primarily just with the band. We knew the songs before we went into the studio. We knocked them out the way that we knew how to do them, and that was great. And I really felt like we were good at that, and so I wanted to do something completely different that maybe I wasn't good at. And I had every intention of playing things like trumpet and brass instruments, things that I knew how to play. But when I got in there, Mark, my engineer and co-producer, is a fantastic guitar player and piano player. So there were times where it needed piano, and I would ask Mark, like, why don't you go in and do something? And he'd go, no, you should go do it. I said, well, I can't play the piano at all. And he said, that's all right. This is better, you know? And so we had a blast making that record. And part of it was, you know, playing things we didn't know how to do. I played drums on a lot of that record. I'm not a drummer, but it was really fun. And I think that record sounds like me.
Hmm. What are you going to wrap up with?
Well,
are you grabbing? First of all, what are you?
This is a banjo ukulele, and I have not touched it since last night, and it's feeling like it's warming up a little. It was about 18 degrees this morning in Sisters, but this is half banjo, half ukulele. It tunes like a ukulele. Actually, it just tunes poorly. But it looks like a bit little teeny tiny banjo.
You have a couple of signatures on it, it looks like.
I do.
They're all upside down. Well, some of them are upside down, though.
One of them is Danny Barnes, the great banjo player who lived in Austin for a long time and was in the Bad Livers, and now lives up somewhere in northern Washington, I think. And then the other one is Clarence Gatemouth Brown, fantastic fiddle player and guitar player from Louisiana. And I got a chance to meet him briefly about a year before he passed away. So, yeah, I'm going to go for this one. This is the first song on Accidental Thief, and it's up there a little. And, that's all I'm going to say.
We drove forever into the sunshine, down all the dirt roads, all through the summertime. Hey, Dad, I think we're going in the wrong direction. Tourist destination, family vacation. 1, 2, 3, 4. Quick, take a picture next to that statue. Put on this t-shirt, it really suits you. Hey, Mom, I think I lost it. Don't lose your temper, you won't remember.
It's Matt the Electrician live on Open Air here on Jefferson Public Radio's Rhythm and News Service. Matt, so nice to meet you. Thanks for being our guest.
It was very nice to meet you, too. Thank you so much for playing the record.